Another part of the meeting, it was, I think, pretty important, and I don't know if I can completely summarize it here, but I'll say a thing or two about it. Was that even though we went through this whole charter review process, over the last couple of years, again, I don't believe that the charter review process was a very good process in the first place, and I especially don't like the fact that in the end, the recommendations from the Charter Review Committee, actually, let me just sort of, I'll just bounce back to me here. Some of the recommendations in the Charter Review Committee were terrible, but they did have a rule that said you needed two-thirds vote in order to actually make a recommendation to the City Council. So there were some things that were not did not meet that threshold, but never mind, because after all, in the way the process worked is that the city council could take those recommendations and they could have discarded every one of them and substituted anything they wanted. Unlike a proper charter commission, where you actually run to be a member from the people from the public could run to be a member of a charter commission. So the people of the city, the citizens of the city, would have a lion's share of making recommendations and a full public process for how to revise a charter. Here it was basically incumbent city councilors having 100% total jurisdiction as to what would be put in front of the voters. Now, again, in a city with minimal news coverage, if you put anything that was even halfway tolerable in front of the voters, there was a good chance they would say, sure, go with it. And that's kind of what happened. But some of the recommendations that came out of councilors, and even though they were not or which were not two-thirds support from the Charter Review Committee, they were discussed as part of the government operations process at some meetings that happened in early 2025. Some of those were referred to government operations to be looked into at a later date, and then sort of went away, right? So you could argue that bringing back something like a call for having a directly elected mayor would be something that was meant to be revisited for possible action or another charter change down the road. So there was a city council order basically calling for the city to contract with the Collins Center to look into some of this stuff. Now, honestly, for a city with proportional representation, having something like a directly elected mayor is not is really compatible with proportional representation elections, as Councilor Flaherty correctly pointed out last night's meeting. And the Collins Center, good people that they are, they have no particular expertise in regarding cities with in Massachusetts that use proportional representation elections because we are the only one. So we actually have greater expertise within our own city's law department or the citizenry than the Collins Center could ever provide. So that, at least that seemed to get a little bit of an acknowledgement of that at last night's meeting. But again, they wanted, they were going to go back and forth about this, about it was some changes in the language, some amendment from Councilors Flaherty and Simmons about what to look into. Perhaps most entertaining was Councillor Al Zuby wanting to make an amendment to for the city to look into having a directly elected, and it crossed out mayor and executive. In other words, in spite of like multiple years of careful review of charter, she wanted to just on the fly say, let's get rid of a city manager form of government because that's what I want. She and of course she and Sabrina Wheeler were the only two councilors who supported that. Even Siddiqui, who I thought would be supportive of that because she'd like to be mayor for life, even she voted against that because she acknowledged that that seemed to be a bit of a settled question from all that went down last year. So anyway, in the end, they voted to, either have the city hire the Collins Center or the law department look into it to sort of at least see what the to review what the possible ways about proceeding on this. I've made no secret of the fact that the The notion about a directly elected mayor in a city where the mayor is not the chief executive, and where and now the mayor doesn't even serve as chair of the school committee, is a sort of a nonsensical reform. And the argument that they keep saying is, well, it leads to bad feelings amongst counselors, to have to go through all that backroom wheeling and dealing over the mayoral election. Well, first off, any bad behavior has to do with the individuals involved. It's not, don't blame the system. This is not like that great line from Emilio Estevez in Repo Man, I blame society. No, don't blame society. Don't blame the charter. If people can't behave themselves in trying to come up with a mayoral selection, it's on them. It's not on the charter. Furthermore, having witnessed a couple of weeks where there's some rather interesting hostility going back and forth amongst councillors, it doesn't take a mayoral election to get people to be hostile to each other. There's a lot of things can trigger that, So anyway, I just think it was the most silly, misplaced focus on that. And where it goes, who knows? Again, my biggest objection, quite honestly, is this notion that nine incumbent city councilors seem to be the only ones granted any input into possible charter changes. To me, that's that's the what do they call it? The rooster minding the hen house. It really shouldn't be on them, honestly. The citizenry should do that, which perhaps maybe brings us back to, again, I won't dwell on it now, but the story of the old Cambridge Civic Association. Back, the Cambridge Civic Association really arrived. They kind of brought the city manager form of government to the city. And once that was established, that's when the CCA was established. And the history of the Cambridge Civic Association and the history of city manager form of government were very, very closely aligned. There were five challenges to proportional representation elections. And it was Cambridge Civic Association that basically fought to preserve the planning charter. So, again, I think the ballot questions were not just about getting, I could be wrong on this, not just about changing the election method, but the charter itself. So if ever there was a time where I think now maybe just to have some entity that can actually think broadly and expertly about matters involving a charter and defending the good aspects of the charter, from silly efforts like Ms. Alzubi's efforts there. This is a good, probably a good time to actually have something like a Cambridge Civic Association who takes up that serious work. Anyway, just one man's opinion. Anyway, another thing that came up at the meeting last night, which is something that's been batted around for a while, had to do with this resident permit parking. There was a Ms. Nolan likes to say how the city council had already decided that the annual fee should be upped from $25 to $75. I think she's sort of misrepresenting reality, but again, I'm not surprised by that. It was supposedly based on what the actual costs were for running the program. Conveniently, forgotten in the discussion about the cost of running the program was the fact that fines levied against people for parking in resident-only spaces generates a very serious amount of money that pretty much would pay for the program itself. But somehow that just didn't get included in the math from the people of our newly named transportation department. Even though I think it's really, really relevant. Anyway, the estimates that they give for the cost of maintaining the resident parking program to me are incredibly inflated, wrongheaded, and I just didn't agree with this change to up the fee from 25 to 75, even though I could certainly afford it. So in the end, so they had passed a council order a couple months ago, saying that we're just going to jack it up to $75, and they were going to get rid of the senior exemption. And there was also, amongst all the craziness, there was also a reasonable proposal with some limitation on how many vehicles you could have registered in Cambridge, and be entitled to a free parking sticker, or inexpensive parking sticker, let's put it that way. The rhetoric from people like Sabrina Wheeler and others, and Nolan, that don't you know private parking costs $100 to $400 a month? So why are we giving this away? Is to me the height of absurdity. Really, is the height of absurdity and kind of offensive to those of us who actually live here. That somehow, because we choose not to be paying four, what is it, 400 times 12, like $5,000 a year for parking, that somehow we're stealing from the city because we happen to have a motor vehicle parked on the street. Oh, give me a break. Anyway, in the end, so there was a, it seemed like Ms. Zuzi had come partially to her senses, and it seemed to think, along with Councillor Azim, that maybe getting rid of the senior exemption was not such a wise idea. Certainly, it was not a politically popular idea. And so we all had some hope that that was going to happen. So, all right, great. So then that there's an order basically calling for looking into that, and that was made subject to the charter right. And then at last night's meeting, it sort of comes up, and then, whoa, from out of nowhere, councillors Sabrina Wheeler and McGovern try to sort of come to the rescue of the $75 fee for seniors. And why they would do that, I don't know. But I guess, if you want to, if you're of the off with their heads, reign of terror view of the French Revolution, maybe this is consistent with that. Anyway, in the end, it basically called for, it's kind of a bizarre compromise, which apparently did kind of go through, which would say that, okay, for anybody who claims to be lower income or feels that the $75 fee is a hardship, they can just check a box and pay nothing. Councillor Nolan then said, no, they should pay at least 25. Well, that didn't go through. That failed on only two votes in favor of that. So in the end, you could, if this really does happen, then in the next round, which will be a year from now, or at the end of this year, late this year, you just check a box and then you pay nothing. Now, of course, this is not under the pains and penalties of perjury. So I'm sure a lot of people, perhaps even me, will check that off because I do resent this discourtesy being extended to people who are senior citizens. As I've also pointed out, in nearby places like Arlington, and not just Arlington, I think even maybe some other towns around here, maybe even Boston, I don't know. You can senior citizens even park at metered parking and not pay. The sticker will actually give them that. So they have a special either hanger or whatever that basically now. Anyway, I just sort of find it amazing how there is courtesy extended to elderly people in the surrounding towns. But in Cambridge, it's like, let's sock it to those old folks because don't you know, some of those folks on Avon Hill, they can afford it. So let's screw them all, you know. Anyway, so in the end, they pass something, and we'll see how that, we'll just see how that one goes, right? The one thing that I sort of missed out on, but there was also some wrangling over the rules, for the city council. Every year they provisionally adopt rules for the current council term, and they did that, and back in January. But then they typically, the government operations or an ad hoc committee works on possible rules changes. So they seem to be infatuated with this notion that somehow, even though they're all being paid close to $100,000 and they get aides and they get their own parking behind City Hall, and let's see, what else do they get? That somehow staying late on a Monday night is an absolute horror show for them. It's oh, m much too taxing. So they wanted to basically say, well, we're going to shut it down at 9 a.m. and then if we need to, we'll come back the following day. I don't think that really went over very well with city staff, who then would have to basically leave what they needed to do on a Tuesday to come back to do this over again. All right. So anyway, some of those rule changes I thought were just silly. I think in the end, what they seem to be leaning toward is something like a 9 p.m. I mean, I remember when it was controversial back around 25 years ago, not controversial, but it was, they did a move basically that if the meeting, the meeting couldn't go beyond midnight. And then if you were getting close to midnight, somebody would have to file for, they have to call for suspension of the rules to extend the meeting for 15 minutes or a half hour or whatever. So, that was called limiting it, because I remember going having meetings that went on until 1:30 in the morning sometimes, right? But now that they've got high salaries, city council aides, free parking for them, not for us, now apparently 10 o'clock is just, well, just too unbearable for them. You got to get their beauty rest, and so they want to do that. So originally it was for a 9 p.m. cutoff, and then come back the following day. Which wouldn't necessarily work for people like Council Flaherty or anybody else who actually has a real job too. I think at least seems to show some deference to him over that. Anyway, the I think they were leaning toward pushing it till 10 o'clock, but then again, if you wanted to complete the business, you could always do what they've done at midnight in the past, which is to call for suspension of the rules to extend the meeting beyond either 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock to finish the meeting, which, let's face it, folks, that's probably what would end up happening pretty much every time. There was also some discussion about limiting how much time councillors could talk. And my feeling about that is show a little personal restraint. Maybe you don't need a rule to tell you you shouldn't be blabbing on for, on and on and on and on and on. Maybe you should just self-police yourself. But if you love the sound of your own voice, what the hell, right? As I say, as I'm blabbering on and on and on, right? The irony does not escape me here. So anyway, one other thing, which is not so much a council business here, but there was an institution in my neighborhood. The S&S restaurant is apparently going to be closing in early June or mid-June. And that's been an institution for as long as I've lived here, for 47, 40, 48 years now, something like that. 48 years. And the SNS has always sort of been there. It's kind of hard to imagine it not being there, but apparently they're going to close up shop. And so there was a city council order calling for closing off some of either, I forget whether it was either Cambridge or Hampshire Street, to have a block party to coincide with the closing days of the SNS. Anyway, I haven't been there in a while. A lot of times we always talk about support the local economy, but then we never do, right? So I think I'm gonna go over there and patronize them a little bit while they're still here. I very much appreciated having them. All right. So let's see. Oh yeah. So let me as we sort of wind down here, let me just mention a couple of the things that happened at some previous city council meetings, just to, in the spirit of just catching up a little bit. So there was I think it was started at the May 4th meeting. There was a city council order calling, this is like out of the old days, city camp for the city council calling on the federal government to, end the blockade with Cuba and, intervene here, all for the, basically what I always sort of laughingly referred to as foreign policy, city council orders. My favorite, by the way, from years ago was when they, it was a Cambridge City Council order. They called for the overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi. That actually became the subject of some fun derision with Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. I know that because they called me up for it at the time. So it's not like it's a new thing for city council to be sort of dabbling in foreign affairs pointlessly. But we haven't seen that much of it lately. So anyway, so because there's some, I guess it was fair to say a stepped up blockade of Cuba, they called, well, we've got to put an end to this, right? Because we're city councilors, don't you? Everybody's going to listen to us. By the way, for the record, I actually think that having a half a century old blockade of a country like Cuba, even if they're ridiculous communists or whatever, you don't have a blockade for 50 years. It's ridiculous. But I don't think it's appropriate for the city councilor to basically engage in foreign policy. So that actually led to a city council order, which was more of a procedural thing, calling on the city council to, basically to refer to the government operations, have a discussion about whether they should even be allowing these foreign policy type orders or discussions happening in the Cambridge City Council. I am of the opinion that, except for a very superficial reference to what's happening in the wider world, this is not city council business, and they really should just steer clear of it all. It was, however, interesting because one of our beloved councillors, Councillor Azim, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, very, very sanctimoniously declared that if ever another one of these foreign policy matters actually came before the city council, that he was going to vote present because it was not appropriately before the city council. Interesting. When you've got a bunch of democratic socialists in the audience and you're running for state senate, and you don't want them be supporting the other guy, the other candidates, or maybe you want them to be supporting you, it's amazing, amazing. It really does make a difference whose ox is gored, doesn't it? Right. So Councillor Azim actually ended up casting the deciding vote in favor of this resolution of having to do with Cuba. So it's sort of like great. Not it, as of course it means nothing in the end, but apparently the speech you make about your future intentions of to steer clear of foreign policy seems to change quite a bit when your own political circumstances change. So take that for what it's worth. All right. So let's just see what else do we have going on here. One other matter that I actually think is a really great idea was a city council order. This was on May 4th, calling for allowing food vendors to operate out of city parks. I'm sure in some appropriate regulated way, right? And I thought, well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to turn every park into a big commercial enterprise, mind you. But I'm speaking as a guy who, when I was a teenager, me and my friend Dean Whalen used to, he was quite underage. He should not have been allowed to drive, but we would drive a truck over by Flushing Airport, set up and sell hot dogs and sodas, along where Flushing Airport is in New York. And so I was a hot dog man once, And I still like hot dogs. Of course, I don't know whether a food vendor would be selling hot dogs in Cambridge. It would probably be like, granola infused, free range vegetarian dogs or something like that. But I like the idea of allowing things like beer gardens in parks. I mean, there's some of that happened in Boston and elsewhere. I like the idea of having food vendors, especially if it's a hot dog guy. Especially if it's a reasonably priced hot dog guy, and allowing that sort of activity in public parks, again, subject to some regulation so that you don't overwhelm, right? And I know that even the license commission has certain rules that they impose on where food trucks can park on streets to do their business. Because of concerns about not competing with the so-called brick and mortar operations of restaurants. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about that. I think that if you got some food trucks in an area as well as restaurants, not everybody who wants to buy food at a food truck wants to necessarily go to a restaurant. Not everybody who wants to eat in a restaurant, in a sit-down restaurant, wants to necessarily be picking up a hot dog from a food truck. So I think it, actually having them both works pretty well. You can they kind of feed off of each other. You can become sort of the food district. It's sort of like I used to think it was weird when a hotel wanted to open up very close to where an existing hotel was. But then somebody explained to me is that it actually turns that area into a hotel district. And when there's conventions and everything going on, everybody converges there, and it lifts all boats, So I actually think that if we can get something like some food vendors in some city parks, I think it'd be great. By the way, at that other meeting, there was a, I think, a very well-meaning order from Councillor Zuzi calling for commissioning a what we call a housing needs study right? Now, truth is that the crisis that everybody talks about is not a constant. When immigration restrictions are coming around, there may be fewer people coming. When MIT and Harvard are not bringing in as many postdocs or graduate students because of federal policies, it probably, not probably, it certainly eases up some of the pressure on the housing market. If we had a really well-functioning community development department or housing, now we have our own housing department, we ought to be in a constant state of housing needs studying, just monitoring it always, and having that sort of guide the policies that we either make or don't make. But in fact, what really tends to happen around Cambridge is people just say, "Don't you know it's a crisis? Therefore, just do as you're told," and that's kind of how it proceeds. And so, even here, when it was this proposal to have a housing needs study, it was made subject to the charter, right, as though this was somehow controversial. And I think it was actually Councillor Simmons, who I dearly loved, actually came back and, just to paraphrase, basically said, "Study it all you want, but don't use any of the information learned to change a damn thing, because don't you know, we're doing the affordable housing overlay and we're doing the multifamily housing, and don't you change anything." Personally, I think they should be looking at all things and be willing to modify all things accordingly. And there's just so much that you can, where you can just, cry wolf and claim crisis as a defining rationale for everything. Anyway, the last thing I'll mention here before winding it down here was that on April 27th was when the city budget came in. And we are now officially over $1 billion in the city's operating budget, though it did grow more slowly this year than in past years, thankfully. But we did finally crack the $1 billion mark. And in addition to that, there was another $110,000 in loan authorizations on top of that, so that's not paid off as you pay as you go. That would be paid off by bond, by debt service. So anyway, very significant. And then they've completed all the budget hearings. They commenced, I believe, on May 5th, 5th, 6th, 12th, something like that. And they got through that. Apparently, there was some sort of weird kerfuffle with the school department budget for reasons I even watched the tape. I couldn't even figure out what the controversy was. Maybe they just don't like each other, I don't know. And then the last thing I'll mention here was there was a move to a call to reconfigure Garden Street last year to restore it to two-way operation, and then that led to an order from one of the new councillors to reverse that. So they went from 5 to 4, saying let's restore Garden Street to two-way operation, and then it was now a council order passed on a 5-4 vote to keep it one way. And again, I'll just sort of say what I've said many times over, which was that Garden Street was a nice, relatively quiet, calm street, always safe for bicycles. It didn't need the separated bike lanes at all. I think it adds very little in terms of safety, but it creates a tremendous amount of inconvenience. And but there's no discussing matters involving bike lanes in this city. Even now, they're about to ruin Broadway where I live. And honestly, even when they have public meetings to bring these things up here, there's no discussion permitted. So anyway, I think I'll sort of wrap it up on that note here. So anyway, hopefully I'll see you in a couple of weeks, in the next edition of Cambridge Inside Out.